A rich resource is available to pastors who solicit congregational input as they prepare their sermons. That's the key sentence for our podcast today, and we welcome you to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking, as we always do, with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, it's my understanding that most pastors really love their libraries. What's yours like?
Well, I really love my library, and more so than ever, because I'm at the point in my life where we're trying to downscale, because I'm older, we're giving away furniture and all that, and sometimes I have a hard time giving away my books. Those are kind of who I am, and I know them, and they're arranged in such a way that I know how to get to the one I want very quickly. It's very seldom I can't find a book that I'm looking for, just because I've learned how to put those in my own little filing system. I have a lot of biographies, rows of biographies. My major in college was history, so history is important to me. A lot of history books, books on the history of revival, many of those. I've saved all those revival books together, and sometime the Lord's going to say, give these books on revival to so-and-so, and I'm going to give them a rich treasure, because they wouldn't find that many books on that topic, apart from somebody like myself giving them that. In fact, even as I talk, I think maybe I know the person I need to give those to, so that's interesting to me. I don't have all that many commentaries. Commentaries are usually more on specific passages. They don't work with the big ideas, which is more what is of interest to me. But I have enough of them. I have commentaries on the language and so on. I think for a lot of people today, and I'm beginning to see more how it's helpful to me, they go to the internet to resource them as far as certain books are concerned. And I'm amazed at what is on the internet. And I can find things. I looked something up, in fact, last night with my iPad. And I thought, oh man, it's driving me nuts. I couldn't think of that person's name. And then I found it through that. I never would have found it through my books in the library, I don't think. But even so, library is very important to me. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to give some of those books away. It just, they mean so much to me. Some of them I've read 2 and 3 times, you know. And some of them are autographed by people that I admired and appreciated. I have Roy Hessian, the Calvary Road, you know that book, and I had him on the broadcast, and we became quite close friends, even though we lived in different countries. I have one of his autographed books. I have Francis Schaeffer autographed books, those kind of things, you know. So, yeah, you talked about something that very quickly gets me animated, because the library is a big thing to me. Okay, now where are you going from there?
Well, a library is an important tool for a pastor. I'm curious what other sources you go to when you're preparing sermons.
Well, I have a source that it's not published, but it's people I respect. And a lot of times when I was earlier in ministry, it'd be people out of the congregation. When I was all those years in radio and television, it would be people who were a part of my staff. You know, if I had trouble with a given passage, I'd call in Dan Lupton, who, since the ministry has stopped, he's now over in Europe in missionary work. But many times I'd say, come on in here, Dan, I'm working on something and I need your input. So other people, I don't have them on shelves. They don't sit real still for a long time. I found that the people were a great resource to me, and I could find people whether they were in another country, because there's all kind of access to different people now, whether I call them on the cell phone, whether you email them, whatever. You just say, hey, I'm working on a passage. Tell me what your thoughts real quickly are on this, or evaluate what I'm saying. Probably the key person in all of that would be my wife. I don't know how many times we've talked together about message that I was working on, or she would not call her sermons, but she speaks all the time around the country, and she'd say, I'm working on this talk, and tell me what you think. Is this going in the right direction? I seem to be stuck right here. So talking things out has been a very good thing. I assume, but I may be wrong, that a good number of ministers use other individuals as resources, just like they would use their library. In my mind, it's no different than saying, I wonder what Spurgeon would think on this. And you can't call Spurgeon on the phone, but you go to a book and see what Spurgeon would say. The phone is better because you can pinpoint something much faster talking to someone than trying to look it up in a book, or even going on the internet, you know, just to say, I'm not sure that I'm on track here. And when I say that, I know where I'm on track for myself, but I may not be on track for the congregation because we're at a different point. I've had huge advantages, spiritually speaking, over people in my congregation in terms of the people I've known, in terms of all the education and everything. If we were talking about bee raising, you know, how you are going to raise a harvest of honey because you got X number of hives, you know, I'm not going to try to figure all that out myself. I'm going to call somebody. And why not do that? You know, if I'm talking about fire prevention, I'm going to say, why do I have to figure that out? You know, I can call you and find out what you would think. And it's just a very quick thing. And so if I want to know where people are who are going to be listening to me speak, I just talk to them ahead of time. And I say, this is what I'm intending to say. And I'm not sure this is all that helpful. Now tell me whether you think it's helpful or not. How would you change things? And I find that I don't just listen for them to affirm me in what I'm saying. I listen for them to change what I'm saying to make it more appropriate for them. Most of the time, I find that when I write sermons, I'm writing them for myself more than I am for the person who is average in terms of the group that's going to be listening to me. And when I do that latter, then I'm going to have to go to those people for help because I'm not really always sure where they are in relationship to the given topic that I'm talking about. So they become my kind of quasi-library in that sense, as far as down-to-earth things.
We've talked in the past about contextualizing the gospel, and we use that term very advisedly and carefully, and we mean it in a very specific way, where people come to church to get answers to their questions. Well, if you don't talk to the people, you're never going to find out what their questions
right.
are. So if you approach them for assistance as you're doing your sermon preparation, you're going to be able to get direction within your sermon that's going to answer questions that they have. I'm curious, I imagine there's some times when you're considering a general theme or topic that you might talk to people before you've actually started very much development. But on the other hand, maybe you choose your subject and the response that you want people to make, and maybe you've gotten to that point before you seek input. How does that work?
I would say that I almost always know my subject and also the response, and then I talk to people because it gives you something specific to talk about. It may be at that point when I talk to them, I realize that I'm going to change my subject, restate the subject, or clarify or change the response because the response I'm calling for is beyond where they are. But if I just go without a subject or without a response or without some kind of initial thought on my part, the conversation doesn't go anywhere because they have no wall to bounce something against, you know. So I'm always, and it's not as though I've just thought of something real fast before I call somebody. Say if I'm going to talk on prayer, I need to be able to say to people, tell me what problems you have with prayer and what questions you have. So people will say, you know, where do you pray? And I think, well, that's a funny thing. You know, where would I pray? So I try to find a place where there are the fewest number of distractions. If I'm in another place, then I got to withdraw. It's hard to pray in a motel room, especially if somebody's got the television on in the next room and you're listening to it. So then probably I'll go and walk. But I'm trying to find a place just to be quiet. I may go sit in the car just because the car is more quiet. And it seems funny to be sitting in the car for a long time. People check out to see if you're all right. Yeah, I'm fine, you know. Sometimes I'll say to a person, yeah, do you ever walk and pray? There are times I just go and walk. There are times when I'm really agitated about something and I don't want to sit when I'm praying. I sit or I kneel most of the time, but it's just easier to walk around. You know, I got a little path that'll go around the dining room table. And the activity of walking keeps my mind more alert. There are many times when I like to pray out loud as contrasted to praying quietly. There are other times when I would say probably the majority of the time when I pray with a pencil. But all these things I'm just saying right now, they're very different to the average person because they've never even heard of such things. You know, I drove a good number of hours to get here, and I probably spent a good half hour in prayer on the way. I don't close my eyes because that would be stupid, you know. But I talk out loud. And I think that sometimes people pass me and they see me talking. You know, now because people have earphones and such, you get kind of used to people talking to themselves. But I talk out loud and you're on the highway, so it's not a big deal. But whatever they conjure up in their mind is what I'm saying. It's probably different than what I actually do. So somehow even saying the things that I'm saying right now is new to a lot of people. And they say, well, you know, I heard you, but what is that praying with a pencil? What do you do with a pencil, you know? And I say, this is what I do. And then a lot of times, it takes me just about the right amount of time to fill out a whole page when I'm writing. And I think, well, I've probably been 15 minutes now praying. And do another page, that's another 15 minutes, whatever. But they're just, it somehow it's relating to people in a way that they can't understand unless you talk it through with them. And if I say things, I say, is this old to you? No, that's all new. And I say, well, maybe I should include that in this. Yeah, do, because that was a whole different world you just shared with me, you know. So
you've just illustrated one of the key reasons for seeking input from other people. Because in the sermon coach method of sermon preparation, we start by making sure we have a subject.
Yes.
Then we make sure we have a response, a clearly stated response that we want from people.
Mm-hmm.
But step number three is to construct the how-tos. If we were to play back what you just said over the last 3 minutes, you've given step-by-step-by-step a how-to,
mm-hmm.
whether it's praying with a pencil or walking around or sitting in the car, going where there's a... All of those are how-tos.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that you can extract from your conversations as you seek help from other people.
And I find they'll do things that I don't normally do. And if I don't talk to them, I never learn what they do. They have all kinds of methods as well.
So if you're a pastor and you're trying to use the sermon coach method of sermon development and you're stuck when you come to those how-tos, here's one way to become unstuck.
Yeah, well, yeah, and probably the way I get unstuck more than any other way is just I'm on a phone call. Or you can do it just spontaneously, Dean. I was with Curtis the other day. We were having breakfast. I said, you know, I'm working on this sermon. Help me a second here. And so I told him what I was working on. What would you say? And he gave me thoughts, you know, and that was great. So Curtis, he doesn't have a commentary that he's written, but he's a good commentary as far as I'm concerned because he's walked with the Lord a long time. And he also has faced a lot of the problems that people in the congregation are facing. And I mean, he's got health problems. He's got a struggle that's going on in terms of a member of the family. And I find that his growth in the Lord is very helpful to me just to stimulate me and say, wow, that's really good what you're doing, Curtis. Would you mind if I shared? And for the most part, people say, you know, don't tell who you're talking to or whatever, in which case that's fine. But it's exactly right. It's what unlocks what you want to say. They don't need more proof text. They don't need more illustrations from somebody's great life. They just need, you know, the very practical aspects of how are you dealing with Jesus in your daily life? And I find that's where probably the strength of my ministry is.
A rich resource is available to pastors who solicit congregational input as they prepare their sermons. We're so glad you joined us for our time together on our SermonCoach.com podcast. You found our podcast at our website, SermonCoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. As we always do, we invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.